politics without the soap opera, with unfiltered constitutional conservative truth. The Conservative Review with Daniel Horowitz.
And welcome back, fellow American patriots and Minutemen, standing at the ready to fight anew for all the issues that matter in the way they matter, at the time they matter. And that is quite a tall order here at Sierra Podcast, but we try to do our best 1 hour every day here. It is Thursday, the 28th of March. And folks, you know, every day we try to enumerate the amount of existential threats to our country. And every day you could pair that against the amount of things that are done to counteract that on the right. You know, like in half the states where the right claims to control government. And yet, there's only one state where we keep running up the score. Everywhere else, it seems hopeless. But remember, it's never hopeless. Joshua 10:25, do not be afraid, do not be discouraged, be strong and courageous. This is what the Lord will do to all the enemies you are going to fight. But, you know, you got to recognize what is the enemy and formulate a plan. I want to focus in particular on healthcare today, the WHO, One Health, that's not just far off, but is permeating the, you know, CDC here domestically, but also the state health departments in 49 out of the 50 states. Shockingly, we have not redressed that. And when you look at 4 years into the rise of the Fourth Reich and all of the lies and devastation and destruction of the creation of the virus, the blocking of treatment, the vaccines, the shutdown, the threats to our life, liberty, and property, and you look at how little there has been done to even rectify what has already happened, much less inoculate ourselves, immunize ourselves from this happening in the future and the next iterations, which we're going to talk about with a special guest, it makes you wonder what needs to happen in order to spawn, to impel some sort of unified righteous reaction. And when I say a righteous reaction, I don't mean memeing about something. The conservative industry has no objectives, no plans, no strategies, no blueprints or roadmaps. Heck, they don't have a destination altogether. Just constant, mindless, aimless whining for clicks about why something impossible wasn't done, you know, outside the Overton window, while absolving their favorite politicians of any responsibility for their own failures on what is eminently achievable and within the Overton window. And that's essentially a summary of where we exist today when we talk about red state governors and their executive actions, the legislatures, what we're doing and not doing with the courts, what we talked about yesterday, the primaries we talked about earlier this week. I mean, I still get stupid responses on Twitter from people. Daniel, the primary's over. You know, whenever I talk about, you know, Senate and governor's races, I'm like, no, you idiot. There's more to life than the presidential election, and most of those primaries have not begun yet. Or not the voting, at least. So I want to give you a sense of where we are 4 years later, after everything we know, the amount of information we have on the death and destruction and lies and deception and censorship around the public health edifice, and yet it is still as powerful as ever in 49 out of 50 states. West Virginia, okay? The state motto is Mountaineers are always free. I forgot the Latin for that, but those of you who know Latin know what it is. Except there's no freedom whatsoever. We talked about this bill that finally passed the legislature. There's almost no Democrats left. Democrats have not carried a single county since 2000, I think, in a presidential race. Yet it may as well be California. HB 5105. Originally, we tried to get an amendment passed to allow for a religious exemption from vaccine mandates, a mandate that should never exist, by the way. But to this day, it remains the only red state that does not have a religious exemption. And I think only 5 or 6 blue states don't have it because they recently repealed them, like Connecticut, New York, and Washington State, California. But anyway, all it did, very modestly, was to say that private schools don't have to have a vaccine mandate, and public schools, you're exempt from it if you only take courses online, you know, like you don't show up in person, or from certain extracurricular activities. So meaning, for a regular school day in public school, you still have a mandate with no religious exemption, even after passage of 5105. Still worse than, you know, at least 42 or so states. This is West Virginia. Yet, this dirtbag Jim Justice, a vaccine animal who once said that Biden wasn't doing enough to promote the vaccines, and opposed Biden getting rid of the emergency declaration, allowing it to expire. He vetoes the bill. And just remember, this piece of crap was just elevated by Trump and the NRSC to be the anointed one for the Senate over a Freedom Caucus candidate, Alex Mooney. I mean, I have issues with him, but he's certainly a lot better than Jim Justice. That is the embodiment of a mindless, populist, stupid movement that you come full circle and you elevate rather than, I mean, could you imagine if you had a Democrat that abolished the vaccines, abolished gay marriage, and then not only don't they get rid of him, they reelect him, but then afterwards they elevate him to another higher office as a presumptive nominee and have Biden and Obama, you know, and whoever their grand poobahs are, endorse the guy. As if this is some sort of new majority. This guy will enter the Senate immediately to the left of Mitch McConnell. By the way, he's big into Ukraine. Huge, huge leftist. He's literally a Republican in name only. He was actually a Democrat. He just switched recently because you can't get elected as a Democrat there. So he just swaps hats and kissed up to Trump personally, and done. Tell me where I'm wrong. What are we even doing here? This is all within our own sphere of influence. Both the legislative happenings in West Virginia and his run for federal office with the support of, you know, MAGA, Trump himself. When he was vetoing it, he said, "I hear how strongly people believe on one side or the other on this subject, and I respect all opinions, but I must follow the guidance of our medical experts on this subject. They are our most important resource. Children are our most important resource, and I will protect them with everything I have." This is the sort of fascism, we have in every red state. I told you, South Carolina. You got the state health department. They want to create a health czar, but even the current version, they said, "Oh, we looked into adverse events and we don't see anything wrong. We recommend new boosters." This is in the year 2024, by the way. 3 years later, for babies and toddlers. So nothing is changing. I want you guys to think. We talked about this a little bit with the, you know, destruction of the Key Bridge in Baltimore, whether it's Hawaii or the Vegas shooting, we have these catalyzing events. And we never wind up pausing time and doing a deep dive into, wait, where did this come from? What's the cause? And again, I'm not insinuating that we have any information definitively what, that, you know, that it was terrorism or this or that. We just don't, you know, we're not getting a lot of information at all. And then to properly prescribe a policy solution. Point and shoot. Here's the problem. Here's what ought to be done. Chronicles, you know, sons of Issachar, men, wise men who know the times and what ought to be done. That's all we need. But there seems to be one man that keeps doing that. You know, there's this meme going around. The Babylon Bee put out a, you know, they have their satire articles, and they put out a headline: DeSantis kicked out of the Republican Party for accomplishing too many things. You know, everyone talks about squatters' rights. It's become a new thing. Like, rather than talking about this for 5 years, he just totally banned it. Anyone could call their sheriff, get them out immediately, and increased felonies for every stage of that process of anyone who engages in it or sells or rents land as a squatter. And done. There's no beating around the bush. He defeated Disney in the final thing. Disney dropped all lawsuits. It's over. Whole nother thing I might get into tomorrow with, he's about to sign a bill extirpating the mention and acknowledgement of climate change from any state documents. Something we talked about a lot as an action item we should be doing in other states. He just does. No one's perfect. We don't have a cult around him like some other people do around Trump. But why is this not the baseline expectation? I don't get it. If we really believe our talking points. You know, I didn't just write a book to make money. I didn't get on a single cable show, by the way. I was like, oh my gosh. You know, this was already early 2023. I mean, we embarked on it in 2022. And I said, you know, we're not changing anything. Despite all the evidence that we had, let's say, circa 2022, about the people who caused the virus and caused the vaccines and the lockdowns and the devastation, we're to this day, we're nowhere closer to solving it. And copy and paste that for any other grievance that we have a pretty robust movement behind so-called exposing it, but then nothing gets done with it. And we just go on and on. This is the circus. And I, for one, actually believe in it. So we don't have any time for this. Again, I will tell you, if we had, you know, let's just play it safe. 20 states just flooring the gas pedal on all of our daily action items, you would have a different country. A, you would have a significant portion to escape to, but moreover, that in itself would be a huge check and balance on the behavior of the left at a federal level. But here we go. We just keep it going. By the way, similar thing to West Virginia and South Carolina, Adam Morgan, you know, we had him on a couple days ago, the chairman of the Freedom Caucus running for Congress against a rhino in Federal District 4. He tweeted out a couple hours ago that he found, it says on the Medical University of South Carolina's website, that you need to ask for a medical exemption from the vaccine mandate. They have vaccine mandates there, including COVID. So you can get a medical exemption, but you know where you have to go for the medical exemption? To the DEI office of this state university. So you have to go to an office that should never exist in a red state to ask for an exemption from a vaccine mandate that should never exist in a red state. I mean, first of all, this is the sort of oversight that we need of the agencies and institutions under public control in red states. And this could be done even when they're out of session. This is why we need to create Freedom Caucuses with staff and a force multiplier as an institution to expose this stuff and then demand action. But, I mean, in Florida, it's like, we're like, you know, the governor either does it himself or he gets calls from people, hey, do you know this is going on? Okay, let's do something about it. Yet we've created a market, an environment where people like Henry McMaster and Christy Noem and Jim Justice, deep red states could thrive and be elevated as the, not just a Republican in good standing, but MAGA in good standing, by continuing to perpetuate the worst elements of all public policy, including biomedical tyranny. And there's one other point I wanted to make before going on to, you know, the next phases, the next battle in global public health tyranny. But I think as a good preface, I got to mention this. Again, I don't want to talk about Trump every day, but what am I supposed to do when the number one voice in our movement, our party, I mean, it's not mine, but you know what I mean, by a mile. I mean, there's no close second. Okay, I think, do we all agree, right? There's no close second to the influence and image of Trump over the Republican Party, over the hard right. Okay, I mean, this is everything. So when he makes comments that are off the rails regarding major policy issues, I mean, don't we have to speak up and say, like, hey, well, if the number one guy on the right is agreeing to the left, we got a big problem because we have no avenue to ever fight that. Now, you can't get a greater issue than healthcare. Healthcare is our life, our liberty, our prosperity, our economy, our ability to afford things. It's the largest share of the economy. I mean, we're seeing this now with a decrepit healthcare system. We bankrupt ourselves to afford subpar care where life expectancy is continuously going downhill, circling the drain. Again, we spend $4.5 trillion as a nation on healthcare every year to get increasingly worse outcomes, and where healthcare is now health insurance and medical insurance is unaffordable on your own and from work, unless you work for government, it's increasingly coming out of your paycheck to get access to a system where increasingly it's becoming like Europe, where you can't even get appointments. And then when you do, the guy's looking at an iPad, he sees you for 3 seconds, and is working off of an algorithm from the One Health, WHO. So anyway, Trump, out of nowhere, like, he randomly comments on things. He put out a post on Tuesday, riddled with grammar and spelling mistakes. I'm not running to terminate the ACA. So now he doesn't even call it Obamacare. And that, you know, he calls it their term. As Crooked Joe Budden disinformates and misinformates all the time. I mean, he made up verbs there that don't exist. I'm running to close the border, stop inflation, make our economy great, strengthen our military, and make the ACA much better, stronger, and far less expensive. So, I mean, this was a big forgotten healthcare or failure of the Trump administration. Let's not forget, COVID fascism is a bastard child of Obamacare. There is no prosperity or economy or cure of inflation without solving healthcare. And there is no solving healthcare without repealing the core of Obamacare. There's no way around it. Because we've talked about this a lot before, that it is extremely, we all know what healthcare ought to look like and why it doesn't look like that. The question is the complexity of the way it is now. How do you evacuate from that? And this is where we needed a mindful, not mindless, movement that I worked very hard on in 2016, 2017, when we had that opportunity. What does healthcare look like? Those of you who are with me back then remember, you know, the degree of specificity. I covered COVID, I covered the courts, I cover crime, I cover obviously immigration. I covered healthcare, not just Obamacare, but holistically what it should look like and what is achievable. Remember, if I give things that are beyond the Overton window of our ability to achieve, it's worthless. As much as we would like that to happen, you might have that as your kind of lighthouse at the end of the ocean that you're steering towards, but you have to have gradations. You have to have, you know, pit stops and tranches that you could achieve that are short of that, but will, you know, start building momentum towards that goal. And everything ultimately revolves around price transparency and the ability to, you know, decoupling healthcare from insurance and decoupling insurance from employment. And ultimately what needs to happen is you need to have people shopping around for both healthcare and health insurance, all 330 million people in the same market with multiple choices and paying for maintenance, the main things really out of pocket. That's ultimately what needs to happen. And insurance needs to become more like what it is with car insurance and homeowners insurance, where it's more for catastrophic. And that's ultimately how you're going to free up innovation, where you're not owned by the government, owned by the insurance cartel, and you get back to a doctor-patient relationship. Right? At its basic core, that's the goal. But you cannot achieve that with Obamacare. That's the problem. You can't really do it. Now, I think within the margins, there are some waivers written into the ACA that states need to look into and utilize more. But the problem is you can't. See, right now, you can't afford to pay out of pocket because you have to spend your WAD, whether it's through your salary or personally, or for most people getting it subsidized, for insurance. There is no way to be like, look, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, I'm capped above any, like, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 out of pocket that year. I'm capped. I won't have problems. You know, I want to pay for a cheap plan that's just going to cap it, that anything above that, I get some big hospital stay, it will be paid for, but otherwise I'll pay, I'm willing to pay out of pocket. You don't really, what Obamacare strategically did was ensure that such an option doesn't exist. Again, there is no getting our economy back on track. There's no getting life and freedom and prosperity without dealing with that. Repealing Obamacare and understanding innovatively how to deal with this. This man is clueless. I'm telling you, I remember in 2017, I spoke with individuals who wound up becoming very close with Trump and very high up in the admin. I mean, very, very high up in the admin. And they would tell me the guy had no clue what Obamacare was. He thought it was just the individual mandate to purchase and maybe like the tax increases to fund it. He didn't understand what it was. He had no clue. And that's somewhat okay if you have people around him who do have a clue. But we've created this movement around him that decided to mimic his low IQ mannerisms rather than elevate him. So we get what we get. So now we have what's called literally one health. Globally, from the international NGOs and organizations, WHO, into CDC, HHS, and flowing into nearly every state and county health department. And you are completely cut out from the most important issue pertaining to life, liberty, and prosperity. Never forget. You know, it's appalling. I see these polls consistently showing, you know, most issues, Republicans are ahead. They lose elections, but, you know, no one's happy with the crime, inflation, economy, obviously immigration, the border. But healthcare, Biden is consistently up 20, 25 points. That's appalling and disgusting, but it's a fact that Republicans ceded this issue long ago, and they never built their own narrative when it's so easy after everything that's happened to us. So I want to get to what we can do, what we ought to be doing, but again, you know, even then, we can't continue electing people like Henry McMaster and Jim Justice in red states, so the primaries are going to matter. But let's get to our special guest. So, folks, we spent time over the last year or two talking about on and off this threat of a pandemic treaty. And it's not just the pandemic treaty. What I believe is a greater threat is this IHR, the International Health Regulations, that the United States is already a party to. And it's not a treaty, so it doesn't need Senate ratification. And come May, this WHO assembly is going to vote on amendments to it because the wheels are turning in their mind. They took a look at the pandemic, and you know, we take a look at it and we're like, oh my gosh, we need kind of 13th, 14th Amendment style, Civil War style reformation to reaffirm the Nuremberg Code. No, their takeaway is the opposite, that there was too much freedom, too much individuality among states like Florida, maybe Sweden when it came to the lockdowns, and we have to make sure that we consolidate this power. And we might think with the WHO is a joke, and it kind of is, but you'd be shocked at how much seeps in, not just to CDC, which is obvious, but even red state health departments. With the exception of Dr. Latipo in Florida, you go to their websites, you go to the list of their programs and the personnel and actions that are taken. It's really along the lines of this one health, which is antithetical, of course, to the Nuremberg Code, to freedom. And remember, as we said, healthcare is, I would argue, just as Joseph Story said, that the Second Amendment is the palladium of all liberty. I would argue healthcare nowadays is really the palladium of all liberty. So what do we have to look out for? What should we be focused on? What action items do we have? As always, we want to get into action items. So with us today is Dr. Kat Lindley. She's been here before. She's a primary care doctor in Texas, president of the Global Health Project that really oversees and studies these edicts that we need to look out for. She's also director of the Global COVID Summit. You could follow her at KL Veritas on Twitter. And she's been going all over testifying in state legislatures to try to create legislation that will serve as a bulwark against this. So I wanted to give you guys an update with the best, as always. Hey, Dr. Kat, thanks so much for joining us once again here at Blaze Media.
Thanks for having me, Daniel.
All righty. So yeah, we talk a lot in private. We work together, and I want to bring some of this out to the public. Could you first describe what this One Health is? I've noticed that it's everywhere. It's in red state health departments. Where does it come from, and what is the agenda behind it?
So One Health, I knew we were going to talk about it. So I kind of did quick research just to see like who has it, where is it, and it's all over every department, really, even within our own health departments. But One Health actually was an initiative that WHO kind of rolled out in September of 2017, and they call it an integrated, unifying approach to balance and optimize the health of people, animals, and the environment. They have included it in their pandemic treaty, the agreement. I believe it's under Article 5, and essentially says that the health of humans is not more important than the health of animals and plants, and it's all interconnected with the climate change. So when you kind of look at this from this perspective that they're trying to pass the amendments and the treaty, and you look at the documents and different articles, you see that they're trying to keep us in this perpetual state of pandemics are just around the corner. New one is around the corner, and it can be anything. It can be climate change. It can even be gun rights, right? They can call that we have a pandemic of gun-induced violence. So it really can be anything according to the way they're trying to approach this. And what's concerning is that behind the scenes, for a while now, our own HHS and CDC, and if you go directly to CDC website, they talk about the One Health basics. They're talking about this approach that we need to introduce into our managing of human illnesses. And each department, each state already has this One Health initiatives. I looked up specifically for Texas, and It's in our Texas Health and Human Services. And then our Texas A&M, which is considered a very good university here, has a global One Health department. So it's very interesting to look.
One Health. And it's something that I never appreciated growing up. You know, I kind of took vaccines for granted. You know, you're born into it and you think this is normal. But the entire mass vaccination approach was this notion of One Health, right? That you could take something that, depending on the type of vaccine and for what illness, for what person, what health status might be appropriate, like any other medical intervention, like any other drugs or treatments or surgeries, and then you make it One Health, One Health. What do you mean when you say, as part of this agenda, so I get the oneness part, but that you're no better than animals?
Yes. So, like, you know, if some kind of, so the way they talk about it, they call this approach that it's particularly relevant for food and water safety, nutrition, the control of zoonosis. Those are diseases that can spread between animals and humans, the pollution management, antimicrobial resistance. So in a sense, if like something that we as humans do affects animals or the environment, right? So go back to the climate change, that can be some type of initiative that they say, okay, you guys are not allowed. And actually just look about the cars, right? They keep on saying that we have this carbon credits. We need to, when we're traveling, we're going to have to start paying our carbon credits when you go on a plane, and then the emission. All of that is affecting the climate, right? So if it's causing climate change, and climate change, according to WHO, if you really track them, that's our next pandemic, our next big health emergency. That's how they can control every aspect of our lives. You know, they can say you can't drive more than, you know, 50 miles outside your radius or whatever, because it affects the nature around you. There's lots of ways of them for them to control us.
No, there is. And I do want to get to, you know, what they have in terms of viruses, you know, cooking up. But it's important to remember, like you're saying, it's not necessarily going to manifest the next time in the exact same way that it will be a virus. We already know that they view the climate as a virus. And talk about this. So the IHR, again, the amendments there, it's going to come up in May. This is something around the corner we have to mobilize for. And so one of the aspects of it is that it expands the definition of pandemics and health emergencies to include basically anything that they say, what harms quality of life.
Yes, exactly. And the concerning thing is, you know, Tedros keeps on saying that we need to pass this because the future of our children depends on it. We need to protect the planet and all this. But truly, when you look at the substance of the both documents, but in particular, you know, the IHRs, you see that we will give power to WHO and particularly their director general to go and at any time declare a public health emergency of international concerns. Once he does that, then you have WHO as a global health authority that can tell us what type of medications we can use, what diagnostic treatments we can use, you know, the diagnostic tests, treatments we can use. They can do the same thing that they did to ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, when they say you cannot use those type of drugs, you can only use this. And in particular, the vaccine, you know, they keep on talking about this new vaccine development we're going to have. Everything's going to be mRNA platform, because on mRNA platform they can get the vaccines out within 100 days. And I actually read a very interesting article how they said, oh, we're going to be able to do, you know, the vaccines are going to come out fast and we're going to have good safety data. And I'm thinking to myself, how can you have any safety data when you haven't looked at long-term consequences of this new product? But that's what they want to do. It's not equity and, you know, production. And again, you have to look, dig deeper. And what do you do? Look at what's happening with the funding of WHO. Who is funding them? private-public partnerships. 80% of their voluntary contributions are coming from organizations like Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Gavi Alliance, the Wellcome Trust, and things like that. So there are a lot of these financial transactions happening, and having pandemics over and over again is going to be really financially beneficial to someone.
And also, isn't it true that the IHR or the proposed amendments would change their recommendations from non-binding to mandatory instructions?
Particularly Article 1. If you read Article 1 of amendments to IHR, that's exactly where they cross out the non-binding recommendations and they become binding obligations, which means that if you sign this, actually, like you said, IHR don't need to be signed. Once WHA, which is the World Health Assembly, adopts them, they actually are already, we have adopted them unless we say we don't want them.
But I just want to interject for a moment to be clear. That will be subject to the determination of the Biden administration, HHS, and State Department, meaning because we're already signed on to it, they could agree, not just agree to adopt, they're the ones proposing a lot of this. So, like with the pandemic treaty, for example, you need 67 votes in the Senate. And as bad as the GOP in the Senate is, and they're pretty bad, I don't see them doing that. But the IHR, it would automatically be binding. So now we would argue it's not, and I want to get to that, and that's what we're going to fight back locally. But at a federal level, they're going to treat it that way. Isn't there also an avenue for them to, again, they're taking everything they did illegally and they want to codify it and do more of it. So one of the things was a censorship regime over, you know, different approaches and different speeches. Talk about the censorship aspect of this.
So there is Article 44 in the IHR amendments that actually does ask for the member countries to censor anyone who is talking differently than the WHO recommendations are. And like I said, they're really not recommendations anymore. They're going to become obligations because of that crossing out of non-binding part of the agreement. It's going to be kind of what we experienced at the height of the COVID pandemic, where, you know, the doctors who were promoting early treatment or were speaking against vaccines were censored by our medical boards. Some of them are still under, you know, have lawsuits that they have to defend, like Dr. Mary Talley Bowden. Some of them have lost their medical board specialty certifications. And, you know, it's always like dig deeper. And you do see these lobbying happening at the AMA level, at the federal medical board organization. A lot of money is going back and forth. And in the meantime, the physicians who have tried to kind of say, this doesn't make sense, this is what we shouldn't be doing, are the ones that are paying the price and will continue to pay the price if WHO gets their way.
No, I mean, this is scary. Again, this is coming around the corner in less than 2 months. And so therefore, in preparation, you've been leading an effort to get states to push back against this. So obviously, it feels hopeless. We don't control WHO. We don't control the Biden administration. Republicans just gave up their last leverage and agreed to fully fund the WHO. So that's going to be done for the remainder of the year. So, you know, the way to fight globalism is with localism. And, you know, every state has a health department, and most or many counties, many states, it's really all the counties have their own health departments. And beginning with the red areas of the country, there's no reason we shouldn't say from the get-go, they might do what they do. The Biden administration might adopt this, push for this. We are banning implementation of these ideas here. Florida passed this as part of their big medical freedom bill, SB 252, last session. Update us a little bit on what you've been doing in some of the states and what our listeners could do to, you know, find such a bill or push or advocate for one in their states.
So Again, if you look at the Article 18 of the International Health Recommendations, one of the things, like I said, they can tell us what type of treatment, vaccine, and all this we will have to use. But one of the things the Director General can do is close the borders and actually limit the trade because, he deems that this area is the one where you cannot enter or leave. By telling doctors how to treat the patients and things like that, this is kind of where you can say this is an attack on the 10th Amendment. Because when it comes to the healthcare, the states are the ones that have the power to oversee the healthcare of their citizens. And having WHO, a supranational agency, tell us how to do it is actually against our Constitution. And so one of the ways the states can kind of try to put some measures in is try to pass different bills that say that WHO would not have jurisdiction within the state. New Hampshire has tried to do that, but they kind of put the CDC part in there as well, which was a problem because a lot of Democrats feel that like we should still trust the CDC and maybe they will lose the funding or whatever. So they did have a hard time with that bill, and that bill has been tabled, and I do know that they will try to amend it and bring it back. But we have Louisiana. This is kind of the big news. We have Senator Presley in Louisiana who introduced the bill that the WHO, United Nations, and WEF would not have any jurisdiction in Louisiana. Surprisingly, Democrats were on board, and this was passed 37-0 in Louisiana Senate, and now it's going to the House, and they do feel that they have support. I was also speaking with Representative Edmondson from Louisiana, who tried to do the same thing last year, but her bill had CDC part in. So they took that out, and now there is the support that, WHO will not have jurisdiction. I personally feel that we have to send a strong message from the states to the Biden administration to tell them that we do not want WHO to have any jurisdiction when it comes to our health. And people have to realize, you can collaborate globally. You can exchange information and work with other countries if you feel that there is a need for it. We just don't need someone like WHO to tell us how to do it and when to do it.
No, absolutely. And look, it's basic legislative negotiation advice. You have to know how far you can go. We should throw the CDC in there ideally, and we need to work towards that. But obviously, if all we can get out of them is WHO, it's still worth passing that much as well, so that when the Biden admin adopts that, this is something that we have with us. But also as part of a broader effort, what are some things that our listeners could do to research their county and state health department websites? What are some things that they should be looking for to flag and speak to their elected state legislator to start getting on board? And we have, various freedom caucuses in some of these states to mobilize, to embarrass the state governor and the state, cabinet members, what they're doing to get this change. For example, what we just talked about with South Carolina and this DEI office and the medical schools. What are some sort of like a checklist of some policies we need to watch out for?
Well, I think one of the good things is really maybe take the bill that Louisiana did and send it to your representative and senators in the state and say, can we do something like this? That's kind of a start. You mentioned there are many states that are trying to do similar. Idaho has a bill in the Senate, 1287, that's also trying to accomplish the same thing. We really truly need to start calling our local reps and say, this is what we need to do, and I support you. How can I help? And we kind of need all hands on deck. We all talk about elections and how we're going to go do this and do that. And when the time comes, at 6:30 at night and I haven't voted, oh, it doesn't matter. My candidate is going to win. We tend to not follow through and we need to follow through. And then on a personal level, you really kind of have to take responsibility for your own health and make sure that you do everything at home first and don't have to necessarily, you know, take pharmaceuticals that you don't need and things like that. I find it very frustrating to see what's happening, obviously, on the federal level, but even on the state level, they all are kind of acting ignorant and, you know, we don't have to worry about this. It's not a big deal. It's not going to happen to us. And if it happens to us, what are they going to do? Well, we all know that, sure, you know, on local level, they're not going to send United Nations troops to make sure that we comply. Those type of talks are really, they don't make any sense. But, you know, they can not complying with WHO and stuff like that. It's not going to happen because, like I said, this administration is very much in favor and they're going to do exactly what WHO and United Nations want them to do. And it is concerning because with these initiatives that they're trying to do, they are trying to introduce the vaccine passports as well. And our states are doing it. Our states are doing these ID digital programs. You know, they say it's voluntary. You don't have to worry. So we all need to really empower ourselves and go on the state website, go look at the health department, see what type of initiatives they're doing, and then call whoever you have to call and say, I don't agree. What can we do to stop this?
No, and I would argue on a county level as well, we should pass resolutions banning WHO mandates. Remember, I mean, we all remember this time of year very vividly 4 years ago. You know, the states were involved, but counties also, the stuff ranged from county to county, and you really need both to push back, but we need to take
North
whatever
Carolina
we can.
North Carolina has done it, you know. North Carolina has, there are three precincts that have started passing resolutions specifically. You know, they did some with the mRNA vaccine, but they put WHO in it as well. And you're right, because in Texas, you know, if the governor says you have to wear a mask or whatever, you know, comes the county judge actually can say, no, our county is not going to do it. So it is important to start at a county level and go up.
No, for sure. And we need that because, as I've mentioned, we have really failed to rectify and immunize ourselves against future iterations of this. In many, many red states, and certainly the blue states are terrible, and we still have these mandates. So Texas, there's a lot of work to be done, and hopefully next legislative session will be key to get the rest of Bob Hall's bills enacted. Mm-hmm. In the remaining time, there's one other issue I wanted to really broach with you. I haven't really covered this, but we see grumblings in the media from these international NGOs we're talking about disease X and the coming of a disease X that's 20 times more fatal than COVID. What exactly is it? Where is it coming from? And how do they know about it?
So we don't know what it is, but it's 20 times deadlier than anything we've ever seen. And then they list a couple of different scenarios that could happen. So I see disease X as a propaganda. I see that this... you know, propaganda of fear because they want to pass this pandemic agreement. They are flying the amendments to IHR under the radar and people are not talking about them enough. And, you know, Tedros Ghebreyesus goes on these different platforms that keeps on talking about how this disease X is going to wipe us all out and we need to make sure that we protect ourselves. And the only way to do it is to sign this agreement. You cannot live life worrying about next disease and what's going to happen. You know, sure, we're going to have different outbreaks and things like that. But if the physicians are allowed to do their jobs, I would say that we can weather whatever comes our way. It is important to realize that by giving the bureaucrats and government more power, all we are doing is allowing them to control our way of life. And that's exactly what they want to do. You know, one day you and I also need to talk about the United Nations. Really, everything that's coming down is initiatives of the United Nations. There's something that's going to happen in September. It's called, it has to do with Pact for Freedom, but it's this symposium on freedom where they're all going to sign this pact that has like 40 some points, but essentially is a way of United Nations having control over the world and global governance. And I know that sounds very, you know, conspirational and, you know, we're all conspiracy, whatever. But my point is you just have to go on their website and read these documents. What they want to accomplish is you kind of have to get a look at European Union. You know, I know you mentioned I'm from Europe and, I'm from Yugoslavia. And when Croatia separated and we became our own country, at one point I was like, yeah, we really need to be part of EU because EU is going to do these great things. But what EU has done, they've done their small version of this global governance where you have bureaucracy that's trying to tell the countries how to lead their life. And now the countries are starting to realize that they have lost their identity and they're becoming this one big Europe that no one wants except for the bureaucrats who are controlling our life. So I know you asked me about Disease X, but that's kind of how they're trying to get us. They're trying to make us fear life so that we give them more power to control it. That's really the bottom line.
And always a pretext, the next virus, the next thing. And remember, yes, like the censorship that could be triggered under the IHR if they declare some sort of public health emergency would be, you know, you can't say their sort of reaction or pharmaceuticals don't work. You can't say that climate change is a myth. You can't say that, you know, gun control doesn't work and things like that. It could apply to anything. And, you know, again, it's not just banning the WHO in the county and state. We definitely need to do that, but also going on offense. I mean, the more that we lay down the markers statutorily in these states that this cannot be done, mandates cannot be done, public health guidance cannot be done like this. And obviously calling out these people by name. I mean, you should get to know who the top guns are in your county and state health departments. And if you're in a red area, especially, and you start reading stuff like this, I mean, you need to start alerting everyone you know, your elected reps. Dr. Kat, where could people go to find out kind of a synopsis, article by article, of what these amendments are so they could pass them around to their elected representatives?
So I'm part of Sovereignty Coalition. There's sovereigntycoalition.org that has a lot of different, you know, there are links to the actual document. So you can read the document for yourself and decide what you think about it. But there's also different initiatives that you can do, a line act where you can sign them and it will be sent to your representatives. Another good website is doortofreedom.org by Dr. Meryl Nass. She has a lot of different articles and ways people can get involved. It's really important to make this an election issue, not only a federal election issue. We need our candidates, both of them, to be asked about it.
Yes.
Well, three of them, really, at this point. Each one of them has to have a clear answer on this. You know, Trump has tried to exit, and maybe he will still feel the same way. Kennedy has indicated that he would not be in favor of WHO either. We all know what Biden administration is doing, but we need to make it election issue and ask them, are you ready to give up your sovereignty to this supranational agency?
And up and down the ballot as well. I mean, in primaries as well, I think this really speaks to Dr. Boden's pledge that we need to get.
Yes.
And this is another thing I'd be remiss if we didn't get it. I mean, are they going to sign the pledge to, again, a lot of them aren't in the power to do this, but that they would advocate to take the COVID shots off the market? Because that's an IQ test that really, see, if you're one of the cartel Republicans, and certainly Democrat, you're not going to want to answer that. That is something that they're not going to want to answer, and that will tell you a lot about them. If they are willing to embrace that message, then that demonstrates that we know where they are, frankly, on a lot of other issues as well. It really is a very determining issue, and we can't just sleep through them. We have a bunch of primaries in June, July, and August, and much less the general election. So we're still early on, and it's not too late to lay the marker down. So again, it's sovereigntycoalition.org, and was it doortofreedom.org?
Yes, doortofreedom.org. And it's exactly what you said. You know, it's interesting that our physician caucus in Congress, hasn't really looked at this either, and it's very silent. It's very telling to me. And there are some good people there. But at the same time, they keep on ignoring this big elephant in the room because they don't want to upset the lobbyists and the pharma industry.
But well, the coronavirus subcommittee, in the GOP-controlled House, I literally cannot think of what they've done. Obviously, the chairman's not running for re-election, so who knows? They pretty much gave away the farm. They funded. In fact, all the HHS agencies got record funding in this omnibus bill. So this is going to have to be a battle we fight in the states to match every state matches Florida and then take even that to the next level. That's where we need to go with this. This is something that can and must be fought. Remember, folks, I know this sounds a little bit out of our control, but it's really not. Because if you had, in March 2020, 20 red states calling BS on this, not only would you have, again, had a place to run to as refuge, but also that would have been such a check and balance. Because, Dr. Katz, just to end off here, isn't it true that the reason why they want One Health is because to create a dystopia, you need shared misery. If there's a whole bunch of people not living in the misery, it's very hard to convince some people that they need to be doing that. And that's why it has to be one.
Yeah. You know, we need to show them once and for all that they are supposed to be representing us. You know, and that's why I love this initiative of the states doing it. You know, states saying, we say no. And now you should say no as well. You know, I love history and I love, I'm a naturalized American, so I had to like learn a lot before I took my oath to become an American. But I love, reading about forefathers and stuff like that. And I posted yesterday on my Twitter because we did a Twitter space on WHO. And it's one of my favorite like little stories. When Benjamin Franklin was walking out of Independence Hall and he was asked, what do we have, republic or a monarchy? And he says, republic if you can keep it. And I love those words. I really, truly do. And I because states now have to say, we have a republic and we say no. Amen. And then, I am tired of the federal government telling the rest of us what to do, but they're so separated from us. They don't live in the same world that we live in. They live in the world of Washington, D.C., where they go to dinners with the lobbyists and party away. You know, I know there are some good men and women out there, but not enough. So no. We need to remind them who they are, who they represent, and they represent us. They represent the state, and states have had enough.
And if we only incited the majority will, and it is the majority in a lot of parts of the country, upon those areas, a place like Texas, I mean, that Department of Health should be firing on all cylinders. So we have our work cut out for us. We do have a Texas team. I'm looking forward to working with you and some of your other doctors on this. Thank you, Dr. Katz, and thank you all of you for joining us today. We'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. God bless you all. Mike is safe.